Hi, I'm here with Jared Kimber, the co-director of the new film, important film, Death of a Gentleman, which discusses the future of Test cricket and some of the corruption issues at the ICC. Thanks for joining us today, Jared.
No problem.
Excellent. Now, you set out at the start of your film to find out if Test cricket is dying. What conclusions do you think that you've reached? Has the gentleman just got a little bit of man flu, or is it in real trouble?
I mean, the film changes so much from that original question that it's almost a tricky one to answer. Essentially, a lot of the stuff that was cut out of the film was us chasing down Test cricket and its future. When we talk to TV executives, they love Test cricket. When you talk to them, they say, hey, we get 5 days of programming. We get a narrative that keeps bringing fans back. We have a targeted audience. We have everything that we want, really, in this sport. It seems to be the administrators who keep saying, no one really likes this, no one's really interested, and we're not really sure what to do with it. Realistically, it's too good a product to ever fade away. I kind of always look at it as, let's say the Big Mac wasn't selling for a couple of years. McDonald's would find a way to make the Big Mac still the thing that you wanted.
Yeah.
We've never done that with Test cricket. We've never really marketed it. We're almost a bit snobby with it, and we think we're above it. And it's such a great game, people should just find it on their own, which is fine in the 1950s and the 1970s. We're now in an era where you kind of have to let people know. It doesn't matter if you've made the greatest art house film or a Dave Eggers novel. You kind of have to put it in front of people and let them find it. And that seems to be where the biggest problem is. The one thing when you talk to players and even when you talk to fans, even the T20 fans, once they really get into T20, they're eventually sucked into Test cricket more often than not. So I'm not worried about that, but I'm worried about the actual structure of it and whether, you know, the West Indies and Sri Lanka won't play each other and how often Bangladesh will play anyone and those sorts of things. They're the things I worry about. I don't worry about the actual, the love of the sport, because I think that's still there and it's not going away.
Yeah, I mean, I've often heard people blame the decline of Test cricket on the short attention spans of younger generations. I mean, I don't really know if I'd buy that, to be honest. I mean, we had computer games and stuff when I was growing up. I'm going to be 40 next year, so they've been around a long time. And I love Test cricket, and as you say, it's a fantastic product. I mean, is it just a question of marketing and things like that, do you think?
Well, the great thing when people say it just goes too long is I've never heard anyone say that about golf, which goes one day less.
Yeah.
The Olympics goes for a couple of weeks. People seem to be able to put their attention span on that. The tennis opens go for a couple of weeks. The Tour de France. No, I can't. As far as I'm aware, I don't see these big philosophical discussions about how do we make the Tour de France into a one-day event.
Yeah.
And when you go back to the very start of Test cricket, Australia had 5-day tests, and quite often anyway, and England had 3-day tests. And the reason they had 3-day tests is they said people just didn't have the time for 5 days.
Yeah,
almost 150 years ago, people have been saying it this long. We now notice that long reads are going on. Films are getting longer, if you ask me, rather than shorter. and so I think it's kind of nonsense. Now, that's not to say attention spans haven't changed. But I think you'll find now that rather than maybe sitting in front of the cricket for 6 hours or whatever, what you actually have is maybe someone on their iPhone or their Android about 400 times a day checking in with the scores. People
yeah.
are still following the cricket. They just follow it a different way. And there's no doubt that life has changed. But Test cricket hasn't got less popular in that time, I wouldn't think. I mean, if you look at Headingley in 1981, when they showed the Ian Botham thing and over and over again, and you have a look, there doesn't seem to be anyone in the ground for half of those days. That's not necessarily the case these days. Now, I know that's changed in certain countries. Some countries have more fans than before and some have less. But I think that's just a bit of a cop-out. But we don't market Test cricket at all.
No.
I would even argue that we don't really market the Ashes very well, and we certainly don't market Australia, India, or England, India very well. As far as other Test matches, I mean, when we were making this film, yet again, another thing that sort of slipped out of the film was that every city we went to, there would be Big Bash posters everywhere.
Right.
Everyone was being told that Big Bash was on. And yet we were there for a test, and very rarely was the test advertised at all.
Yeah, I mean...
and that's the same everywhere, unfortunately. I remember when we went to the World T20 in Sri Lanka, posters everywhere for the World T20. When I was there for a test series, nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think the administrators just don't care about Test cricket? I mean, is it just they're concentrating on T20 because all they're concerned about is the board's finances, and anything else they say is just, they're not really being completely truthful?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it goes both ways. They literally care. They really do. I mean, I would say most administrators don't care about T20. You only have to look back to the original meetings of the World T20 when India basically said, we don't care about this. Australia didn't care about it for years. Look how long it took the Big Bash to even exist as a league. The first Big Bash had novelty players, had a rugby league player playing in it for fun. So you couldn't really say that they care more about that. What they don't know and what they perhaps aren't good enough at doing is working out actually how to take the love of the game and the complex nature of the game and selling it to an audience. It's a tough sell.
Yeah.
So I think there are great ways that you can do it that they haven't even really tried. I would love to get a chance to work with the cricket board one day because I really think there are ways that you could do this. But at the moment, essentially what happens is they just go, it's a tough sell. We're a T20, to be fair to T20. In 5 years' time, 20 years' time, it may not even exist, especially at the level that it is now. But the one great thing about T20 is, basically any one of us could market T20.
Yeah.
And that's its strength. It might be its weakness in the long term because, anyone can market a Kim Kardashian product. It's a lot harder to get someone to a Noam Chomsky lecture, but we sort of know which one's more important, if you know what I mean, and probably which one's going to enrich us more in the long term.
Yeah.
But that is sort of part of the overall problem, if you know what I mean.
It just sounds like laziness.
I just don't think we've even tried to market Test cricket. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just saying it just sounds like laziness from what you're saying. I mean, maybe laziness is a bit of a cheap shot on my behalf to say that. But, I mean, one of the things that I found particularly exasperating was the failure to agree a Test championship. I mean, for me, that would have been such a good thing. I had a friend back at university many years ago who used to hate cricket, and he just used to say, look, every game's a friendly, and take the mickey out of Test cricket because of that. And having something meaningful like a Test championship, I would have thought would have been a great idea to resuscitate Test cricket. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Test Championship, two-tier Test series. I'm sorry, two-tier leagues in Test cricket. There are lots of different things Test cricket could do, but those sort of things all come back to one basic problem: is that we have no leadership, we have no group in charge, and the people that are in charge are not really trying to make Test cricket a stronger product for the world. They're trying to make sure they make as much money from the cricket that they own the rights to and that they can make money off. So. And, we could have that sort of discussion over and over again. And, the World Cricket Committee, the MCC Committee has, even the ICC's Committee has. But when it comes down to it, none of those things can actually happen without actual governance. And what we have at the moment is not so much governance, just three countries doing as they please in their own sort of troika.
Yeah, I mean, getting on to the administrators themselves, I mean, I have to say I didn't think that Giles Clarke came out of the film smelling of roses, to be honest. I mean, he seemed quite aloof and not particularly interested in dealing with the issues. I just wondered, what were your impressions of Giles Clarke and Srinivasan?
It's quite interesting. Essentially, with Giles, I think, thought we were students. You've got to understand, this is one of our big advantages in the films was that we were so dishevelled and unshaven and unmatched, and we didn't look like a professional filming crew at any stage.
Okay, was that intentional?
We were shooting on a digital SLR camera, which was, 4 years ago, was still a bit ahead of the curve, if you know what I mean. And so I think they went, well, they're shooting this on this funny little camera. They've got, a bunch of weird guys with beards. everyone's dressed, other than Sam, everyone was dressed a bit like a slob. And I think he maybe he knew who we were, maybe he didn't. But he certainly, from our appearance and the way we came in, he thought, I'm going to set these people straight.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing. I'm going to tell them what is what. Now, it turned out we didn't know what we were doing. It just didn't look like we did. We've obviously done our research. Sam interviewed Giles, and Sam was certainly prepared to ask the big question.
Yeah.
And then, so about 20 minutes in, when that stuff happened, then Giles gets quite angry. And rather than talking down to us, he's now a little bit angry. And this is, the problem is, realistically, that this is, a lot of people will say that's just the sort of personality he has.
Yeah.
But it's actually also the way that cricket is run. They don't really, the guys at the top, the people below that are much better. I've got a lot of respect for quite a few people in cricket, and I know a lot of them are trying to do good. But the people at the top are very much like Giles, even if not as publicly the way that he is, in that they really, they don't look into the issues properly. They just give you their bland answers and their angry answers, and they're like, we know what's best, we don't want you to watch. I mean, Giles literally goes around telling people not to look into cricket administration. They don't want people to look into what they're doing. They just want us to accept that what they're doing is right. And what we've set out in the film is essentially that that's not the case. So Giles is, he's quick to anger. He's very angry. I mean, even his best friends would describe him as pompous.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side of that is Srinivasan, who is, I would say, a much smarter man, a much more cunning man. He went out about his way to make us feel very comfortable, where Giles did the opposite. He went out of our way to make sure that we had everything we wanted, that we needed. He gave us the interview. I tried, you know, every trick I had in the book. We weren't sure what to expect with him because we knew he had a bit of a short temper. And so I really wanted to get him talking as long as I could.
Yeah.
As it turned out, perhaps what I should have done was actually maybe goad him slightly more and see if he snapped to show people the other side of Srinivasan.
Yeah.
Which we didn't see.
He comes across as quite cool, actually, I have to say. Quite calm and collected, I thought, in the film.
Definitely. He's a brilliant politician. He's very good at answering the question the way he wants to, whereas Giles obviously quite often just answers it the way that we would have. I mean, we couldn't have scripted Giles' thing much better. Whereas with Srini, we really struggled to get what we were trying to get out of him. Then we turned the cameras off, and he took me aside, and that was when I realized how he really works, which was very much a cunning man, very much a man about power. Basically told me I shouldn't be involved with Modi at all, because Modi was, not a good man. He said it in slightly stronger words than that, but, you know, the kind of thing he would have said. He told me he was a servant of the game, and, you know, I should respect him as such. There's a few questions that I asked him where I referenced other people's opinions of him. He wanted to know the exact person who said this, the exact person who said that.
Interesting.
And he did all this with his arm around me, taking me over. When he told me originally, he said, no, come here, I want to show you the bat that Matthew Hayden gave me. And it was a mongoose. And I just kind of feel like even that was part of the threat, if you know what I mean. Cricket's big club right in front of my face.
Yeah, did Matt Hayden use a mongoose? I don't remember that.
he did. I think he did the Chennai very briefly.
Okay.
It was very interesting the way the two of them work, and that's kind of the way the two of them work with the ICC. Giles says the big pompous thing and upsets everyone, and Srinivasan sort of comes around and puts an arm around them all and says, look, it's okay, I'm the good one out of us two, but you're obviously going to do what we want, yeah? And that's kind of their dynamic as two leaders, and it was very interesting to get that close to them and to spend, you know, a good period of time with both of them, really. It was interesting.
I mean, one of the things, I mean, it's not in my nature, I have to say, to stick up for Giles Clarke, but I mean, one of the things that he did say, which I thought he, you know, where he did have a point, is he turned around and I think he said to Sam, it's my job to put my board's interest first. And one could argue that he does this rather effectively and, you know, and that maybe he is a skilled politician and negotiator. I mean, what would you say to that? I mean, is it just simply that he's not thinking broadly enough about the, you know, about the health of the global game? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that him and Srinivasan both have that view, that they are there to put their board's interests first. The problem is, though, that they took over the entire game.
Yeah.
That's fine if they're on the outside. I've got no problem with them doing that. If his role as chairman of the ECB is to put his board's interests first, I have absolutely no problem with that. But when he's actively running the entire game, 105 nations, and he's still putting his board's interests first, and Cricket Australia is putting their board's interests first, and BCCI putting their board's interests first, that ends up with 52% of the ICC revenues going to those three nations who are already the only three making money.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
So at that stage, yes, he's putting his board's interests first, but he's also completely strangling the whole rest of the game to do so. So
absolutely. For instance,
there are some things that, have we made a slightly different film? He talks about how much he loves the women's game, how much he loves disabled cricket and blind cricket, and how much he's done for that. And he's obviously got this new franchise league for women's cricket. All of these things are great. But I had a chat with a woman's cricketer recently. She was so excited, and I kind of put a damper on it when I said, but is he using the money that other boards could have used to pay their women play that they no longer have? Because they've now got a smaller cut of the pie. You know, this money all has to go, you know, it's all now going towards these three major boards. So when Cricket Australia and the ECB make their women cricketers professional, that's awesome, and we all applaud them, and we want that to be, you know, we want that to be something that happens right around the world. It's kind of hard for the Sri Lankan cricket board to do that at the moment, the South African cricket board to do that, the Pakistani cricket board to do that, meaning that they now make less money. Now imagine Ireland, you know, and those other countries, and the countries below Ireland even, you know, how are they going to bring their women's cricket up? I don't care about English cricket, and I'm not saying that, I don't care about Australian cricket, I care about cricket. That was the way I was brought up, you know, I grew up in a cricket club, and for me, cricket was the most important thing. You know, I love Australia, you know, as a cricket team, but I love Victoria and Pakistan almost as much. Well, I probably love Victoria more, to be fair. I love Pakistan. I love Irish cricket. I love Afghanistani cricket. You know, I'd love to learn more about Nepalese cricket. For me, cricket is the important thing. That is the problem here. That is what is being run badly. It's not the ECB. I mean, we can all argue about whether Giles Clarke is doing the greatest job for the ECB, and I certainly don't believe he always is, but he is definitely trying to make the ECB this all-powerful, amazing cricket board. The problem is that, you know, the actual game itself is the one that is suffering.
So what can we actually do then? I mean, one of the things, I remember in the bit where Sam's talking to Giles Clarke again, and he was really responding to the Wolf report, where Wolf said that there were no ethics and a complete lack of transparency at the ICC. And Giles kind of snapped back, saying that Wolf doesn't know what the ICC is. What do you think the ICC is, and what can we do about it?
I think Giles is 100% right when he said that. Lord Wolf didn't know what the ICC was, in that he thought that by going in and telling them what they were doing wrong, they would listen to him. And that was probably because he'd worked with people in business and things before. And that, you know, people who actually would listen to him. What the ICC is, it was a private members club within a private members club. So it's 10 teams voting on the entire future, or the entire running of the game, and then three countries taking that over within those 10 countries. What Lord Wolf was trying to say was, okay, we know it's this, but what it could be is an organisation that tries to grow cricket everywhere. They're trying to make the most out of cricket everywhere. And Lord Wolf probably didn't realise the sort of people he was dealing with directly. I could be wrong with that. Maybe he did realise, and he just thought that once he wrote such a good report, they'd listen to it. But, no, I mean, we're in a ridiculous situation where essentially we are still left with the scars of this old system, of which we've always had. We as test-playing nations, and I'm going to go fans, media, players, administrators, everyone is to blame for this. We honestly believe that cricket is our sport because we play test cricket.
Yeah.
Right? We don't look at the fact that Ireland have this amazing history in cricket. Scotland have this amazing history in cricket. And America has this amazing history. Argentina, an amazing history in cricket. We don't look at the fact that, realistically, Sri Lanka, for years, could have played test cricket. You know, they could have played test cricket far before they did.
Yeah.
You know, Rhodesia could have played cricket, you know, far before they did. At least Zimbabwe could have come straight in. You know, Pakistan had test players, and we made them wait 5 years to play their first test. Bangladesh had hosted test matches, and we made them wait. You know, we've got this thing where we kind of look down on other countries if they're not quite as good as test cricket as we are. What we have to do is get beyond that. And that's part of what Lord Wolf was saying, is that cricket isn't just the test playing nation. So it cannot just be run by the nations who are best at cricket. That's not how it should be going anymore. We have to go beyond that, and we have to make sure that, you know, a country like Kenya that did so well for such a short period of time wasn't just allowed to
fade away. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what can we do then? Is it just about changing the attitudes of people within the ICC? Because I imagine there's going to be no revolution. So, I mean, what do we do? Do we just kind of chip away at them, you know, and just try to get them to look more broadly and not look after their own interests all the time? I mean, what do you think?
My sort of dream solution at the moment, and it's not a great dream, to be fair, but my dream solution at the moment is that through many different forces, Mr. Giles Clarke and Mr. N. Srinivasan will leave cricket shortly.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we will have hopefully seen this film. We'll hopefully have got some energy through people. I mean, you know, so many people, everyone who sees the film sees, really feels passionate about this. And that's what part of the reason we were so frustrated was before. Me and Sam had that passion, and we couldn't understand why other cricket fans don't. And we, hopefully through that film, we had the power to get the big people on board, to get politicians on board, to get people in the media on board, to get people even from outside of cricket on board to go, okay, this is a $1 billion sport. We need transparency. We need good governance. This needs to be run correctly. And that the next wave of administrators, when they come through, feel that pressure and actually say, no, we have a chance to do something here.
Yeah.
We have a chance. I mean, it doesn't matter how transparent and how egalitarian cricket is. India is still going to be the most powerful nation. No one's trying to take that off them. Through their love of cricket and their population and their economy, they are always going to be the most powerful nation. But what we have to do is start being fairer with the ICC money. Giving them the money that they already have doesn't make any sense, because they're always going to be more powerful and richer anyway. What we should be doing is basically saying to these other administrators when they come in, this is our chance, really. This is our chance to do something special here. Do you really want to go down as the next Srinivasan Vassan or the next Giles Clark? And hopefully they don't want to do that. And the other thing is, I really believe that now the next generation of cricket writers are certainly going to want to write about administration more. And they're going to want to look at these things. And they're not going to let us get to the situation that we got to this time, which is where it got massively out of control. And there's no one writing about it.
Well, that's hugely encouraging, because journalists have such an important role in holding people to account. It sounds promising what you're saying. I know our readers get frustrated with the mainstream journalists sometimes, so it's good to hear.
And to step up for them slightly, although I definitely think they dropped the ball on this, and I'm basically going back to the first cricket journalist through to, you know, the ones now. I think cricket journalists have always sort of got the ball on cricket administration.
Yeah.
But it's also, the modern job especially is, you go to a press conference, you write up what happens in the press conference, you go to the game, you write up what happens in the game, there's a press conference after the game, and you do that. There are no, it's not like The Guardian, and I mean, The Guardian was the newspaper who received the big three takeover first.
Yeah.
And they weren't the ones who broke the story. It wasn't like their editors were clamoring for this. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
The cricket writers, they're sort of drip-fed stuff through the boards to begin with. I mean, you only have to look at what's happened with Telford Vice and Fidus Munda in South Africa when they went up against Harun Lorca.
Yeah.
Their jobs are proper. Maybe their jobs aren't in danger. It sounds like I'm trying to fire them there. But, their actual day-to-day work is much harder now and almost impossible in some situations, because Cricket South Africa are not helping them. Now, that could happen to a lot of journalists. I've lost work doing this film. I almost got kicked out of the press box. Chances are, if Sam went for a whole new accreditation with a company smaller than Crick Info, chances are he may not get it right at the moment.
Yeah.
So there are real world consequences for that. So I understand it, but at the same time, you can't go on and on and on about FIFA, which is a scandal, and not go on and on and on about the big three, which is also a scandal. I mean, both of those things.
Yeah.
Properly hurting the game, and this is where we got so frustrated with the cricket writers, and this is why my blog originally existed, it's why your blog existed now, it's because I was so angry that things I thought were important were being talked about. I didn't think the game was written about correctly, and I certainly have never thought the administration has been written about correctly, and I think we're in a position now where we can just do it ourselves.
Yeah.
That's what this film is. I mean, this film is kind of like a blog with cameras. I mean, it was a very low, the amount of money that we got before we went to Australia to start this film was massively small. Like, you know, you couldn't live on that amount of money in London. It was a tiny amount, and we shook the can. And then when we were over there, we got some crowdsourcing to bump that money up a little bit. But we still had no money. We were essentially, you know, doing the film. The opposite, you know, proper documentary makers will be like, well, what you do is you go to a broadcaster, you sell the film. The amount of times we went in and we said we're doing a film about cricket administration, and they just that's not going to work. I mean, we proved them wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
When I started writing on Cricket with Balls, people went, no one's going to listen to some bloke sitting on his sofa. You know, if you're good and you do the research and you show passion and you're willing to learn, you can actually do something now. So, you know, there are I had conversations about your blog with senior cricket writers, and they read your blog.
Yeah.
And these are the same people 10 years ago that said bloggers are ruining everything and they'll never read a blog in their life. But they now know to follow the full toss and Dimitri Old's blog. And,
yeah, Dimitri, yeah. Yeah, Outside Cricket it's called now. Yeah, it is interesting. Sometimes there's a, you know, a mainstream journalist will use a turn of phrase and I'll think to myself, oh, I used that last week. You know, yeah. did they read it on my blog first? I don't know. Maybe that's giving myself too much credit probably. But
it doesn't even matter. I mean, you know, that sort of thing happened to me as well, but that doesn't even matter. What the important thing is that your piece now, I mean, if you look at some of these guys, you know, John Etheridge and Dean Brinkley and Dean Wilson, they're not writing for Cricket audiences. Dean Brinkley is slightly more, but obviously his paper's not very big. Dimitri Old writes a blog that goes viral, I forget the other guy who writes on Outside Cricket, but the other guy on Outside Cricket writes a blog that goes viral. There's every chance that more people will read that than read Stephen Brinkley in a month. And that's not having it go to Stephen Brinkley. It's just that's how the internet works now.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. So suddenly there are a lot of people with a lot of, you know, a lot of little people like us with some power. It's good. I mean, what we try to do anyway is just try and hold authority to account now and again. And, you know, in between a little bit of analysis about cricket. And I have to say that the way that you started with Cricket with Balls and now you're making films and writing for ESPN Cricket Info, you know, that's kind of an example. It shows that something can be done. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, our film is a perfect example of all that sort of stuff, because essentially, when we first started our videos, we talked about a lot of these issues, but they were seen as funny little videos, so no one cared. And Sam and I, either of us easily could have gone off and written a book about this. I mean, Mike Jakeman obviously wrote a book about saving the test. I think he might have started just after our film, or maybe just before our film. That was certainly when I heard of it, that he was writing that book. And to be fair to Mike Jakeman's book, this is not his fault, because Gideon had written Sphere of Influence. Our film has the opportunity to do so much more than Gideon's Sphere of Influence, which is an amazing book on cricket administration and how money came into cricket. But the reason that we've had the opportunity to do this is because film is such a brilliant medium, and you get so much passion through film. And 90 minutes, and it's an experience. And like you watched this in a press screening, I think, so I don't know what your experience was like, but when you watch this with paying customers, you know, they cheer and jeer and they laugh, and you come out of it really feeling like you're part of something. And that's why we really wanted to make this film, because we knew that that's what films could do.
Yeah.
We had to find a way to make this not about, I mean, it's very hard. Like I said, when you go into a production office and you go, you're making a film about cricket administration, most of their heads hit the desk. But we knew that we could make it in such a way that people would care and that people would be involved and that, you know, then people would do something afterwards.
Yeah.
That's what blogging allows you to do as well. And that's definitely what modern filmmaking does. There's nothing to stop a bunch of you bloggers doing another film straight after this. You can do this now. You know, it's so cheap to make films now. And so easy. It's only expensive later on when you try and make them look pretty. But by then, if you've got a really good story, people are more interested in giving you money. And even then, you can make a very cheap film that changes people's opinions and that entertains people. And that's what we should be doing. There should be more people writing about cricket. There should be more people making films. There should be more people making online documentaries and doing interviews with important people. You can, I'm sure now, even with your contacts and even bloggers newer than you, if you try hard enough, you can work out and you can get through to Dave Richardson and contact him. Now, he may say no.
We can try.
He's not interested, but yeah. I'm sure that you could do that sort of stuff. That sort of thing was even hard when I was starting out, but those sort of things are opening up. And once you get one person at the ICC or the ECB's email, you can work out what their email accounts all are.
Yeah.
That's how I did it when I started with balls. I wanted to contact someone. I went, wait a minute, I've got this person's email. That's how it is for everyone. I just do their full name, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, these things are opening up now, and you can do it, and you can hold these people to account.
Yeah, no, it's you're giving us ideas now, Jared. This is good stuff. I'm quite enjoying this. One of the things I find frustrating, just quickly on the blogging, is not having the time. You know, it's just finding the time to do these things when you've got a day job as well and a family to support. you know, it'd be fantastic to just take a year off and dedicate myself to a project like you have. It'd be fantastic to do that. And who knows, maybe the opportunity will come up. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
I mean, when I started with Cricket with Balls, it was the same time I started my own production company. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't sleep for the first year or so. and I kind of threw myself into both things. And it worked out quite well for me in the end. But I know what you mean. And it's no different than now. I mean, at one stage, I mean, I'm making another film at the moment on the history of cricket. I'm writing a book on the history of Test cricket. I have two boys under three. You know, I have up until very recently, I was full-time with Cricket Info.
Yeah.
You know, I do the odd bit of freelance. You know, and without Sam, I mean, Sam was the one who really took the big punt on it because he's basically... Not being, I wouldn't say he's worked without pay, although, you know, neither of us have really, I haven't taken any money out of the film yet that I know of, and Sam has probably taken very little in terms of wage. We have had to take that punt. And I suppose I'm the sort of person in my life who's already taken that punt a couple of times before. Not to say it doesn't help marrying a lawyer. that certainly changed it, but I was willing to do that beforehand as well, well before I met or even knew of my wife. I took that punt when I started up my production company and Cricket with Balls at the same time. But that's only if you want to sort of make a living off it, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
You guys can certainly, I think you guys are doing the full toss much smarter than I ever did with Cricket with Balls. I always sort of wanted it to be five or six people and for me to just be one writer. Unfortunately, I just couldn't find the other people who were able to write on the level I wanted or about the things that I wanted.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that want to contribute, but it's just finding the time. That's the thing, you know, and because you can't pay them.
And so that, you know, that was obviously a very big problem as well. But I got to a certain age where I was, 27 when I started with Cricket with Balls. And I kind of thought, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly. And I was also very lucky because at that stage, blogs were very big. And the first couple of years, despite the fact I didn't really get much work in the actual press, Cricket with Balls got quite big. And I got a lot of money through sponsorship.
Fantastic.
You know, betting agencies and other weird... there was a whole thing of money that you could make on a blog at that time. But it doesn't really exist anymore because they worked out it doesn't work or...
it's surprisingly unlucrative, advertising now on webs, because my day job's advertising and it's tough out there on online advertising for publishers, I think, but,
Exactly, and that was part of the reason. I mean, people say, oh, I can't believe you left Cricket with Balls. To be honest, my original plan was to get Cricket with Balls to an area where I could make enough money for the year. And to just work on Cricket with Balls, and then to start basically saying to all the cricket boards, you know, I've got bigger numbers than any of these other people. Do you really want me on the outside rather than on the inside?
Yeah,
Of course, now they don't want me on the inside either. So that wouldn't have particularly helped my cause, perhaps. But I mean, you know, I'm not saying every single person who sits down has to. I mean, you look at something like what John Houghton does. He only posts, a cricket blog probably once a week. But he has something to say, and he says that, you know, he's not very rarely writing about cricket administration. I'm just saying if you have something to say, there are mediums now that you can get it out. One of the most frustrating things I have, maybe slightly less with you guys, but with Demetri's blog, is sometimes I'm just like, you're writing about other cricket writers who no one really cares that much about their opinion. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like... I wish you guys would write more about the issues and less about what the Daily Mail said or the Sun has said. Realistically, up until 3 years ago, no one knew who Paul Newman was. And I like Paul Newman as a person, and that's not having a go at him. Before I moved to the UK, I literally didn't know who John Etheridge was. I didn't know who Stephen Brinkley was. You know, I didn't know who Dean Wilson was. That's not slagging off any of those people. It's just saying they're not big movers and shakers. So when you're writing an article about what they say, I'm a little bit like, why don't you just write an article about the actual issues as they stand rather than the issue, one individual writer who writes for a newspaper where you're going to have no crossover with that writer anyway, if you know what I mean.
I think people find the soap opera of it interesting. I think I do.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. The problem is, when you're doing serious investigative journalism, that takes a lot of time to do. As I say, it just comes down to time, you know? Myself and Maxie Allen, my colleague, we, you know, Maxie's freelance radio producer. He's got a bit of a journalistic background, so he's probably stronger on that kind of thing than I am. But, you know, I think that we've got the ability to do it. And just maybe Maxi and I might just have ourselves a little project down the line. I don't know. You've inspired us, put it that way.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I came from nowhere when it comes to cricket. And I didn't read cricket blogs before I started writing one. And I had a conversation with a mate, and he said, why aren't you writing a cricket blog? And I went, that's a very good point. I'm going to start writing a cricket blog. I didn't realise I'd be at best position, you know, 7-8 years down the track. And I didn't also realise that when I started doing it, a bunch of people would go, what if this idiot can do it, I can do it. And you know, it's kind of the Kevin Smith thing, when Kevin Smith made Clerks, and everyone looked around and went, he just made a black and white film in a convenience store. We can make a film.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a big part of it, because I do want other people to have their say. You know, and I'm not going to agree with all those people that have their say. But I think the more of us who are talking and the more of us who are watching, most importantly, the better. Because my biggest worry is that we're going to be in a situation where it's very hard to do what Sam and I did when you're in the industry. You only have to look at Sam from the Daily Mail and his concussion in rugby, Sam Peters and his concussion rugby story. It's very hard to be in the industry and questioning the industry, if you know what I mean.
Well, you rely on them to a certain amount for information, don't you? You know, you have to sustain some kind of relationship with those people, don't you?
Exactly, and so it is hard. So it's actually easier to do this when you're slightly more on the outside. Me and Sam probably started this maybe a year later than we should have, if you know. Like, obviously, the film wouldn't have been as good had we done that. But from a point of view of, you know, had we started a little bit more when we were absolute nobodies, it might have been slightly better for our careers, because we wouldn't have been jeopardizing what we already had. From that point of view, but it's certainly easier from the outside than doing it. And that's why, you know, there might be other cricket writers within the industry who want to do the sort of things that I've done and that you want to do. But they also go, well, wait a minute, that means no one at this cricket board will ever talk to me again. And that is now happening. And that is what cricket boards are doing. You only have to look at cricket.com.au. They are clearly trying to be a news service.
Yeah.
And that is what they are trying to basically say, that no one in Australia needs to follow anything other than cricket.com.au and buy newspapers. They don't want anyone on The Raw. They don't want anyone on Cricket Info. They don't want anyone on Crick Buzz. They want people on, you know, on their website. And that is the next step of what we'll be fighting against. And that's why bloggers are so important in this, because bloggers can say things even newspapers can't say. And bloggers can, you know, write rambly long pieces and ridiculously short pieces, and can, you know, do things with comedy. And, you know, like, a part of the reason that me and Andy are doing, you know, 2 Men Out is we really want to talk about the biggest issues in cricket that we don't think people are talking about. But the fact that Andy's a comedian and I have my background allows us to do it in our own way.
Definitely, yeah.
And that's a really, really important thing. And there should be, you know, heaps more people doing these sorts of things. And I don't care.
I agree.
You know, I still don't think cricket is written about correctly. People talk about how cricket has this amazing writing, but I still don't think we have the proper analysis that we should have. You know, it's amazing to me that Freddie Wild's one of the few T20 cricket writers in the world. We should have T20 specialists. How come there's not a blog on Wicketkeeper? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
How come there's not a blog on ICC politics? Yeah. How come there's not a blog on captaincy? There are so many things that people could be writing about that they don't write about. And, you know, that's why I'm so keen to do as much as I do. And, you know, I can only go so far, but I want everyone to do it. That's kind of my thing. Is I think all radio stations should be commentating the cricket.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone should be there. Any newspaper who's at a cricket ground should also be doing video from that cricket ground. They should be promoting the sport. We should be talking about the sport as much as possible. We should be letting as many people in. What really annoys me is the ECB still don't like letting blogs and online publications into the boxes, and I've had a go at them about this many times. They're cutting their nose off to spite their face. I mean, the ECB and the BCCI go to YouTube. They pay companies to go to YouTube to take their content off YouTube. That is where young fans find the sport. Who doesn't want to see the great catch on YouTube in a 7-second clip? You go to what the ECB do, and they do a highlights package that is made for pre-existing cricket fans. We don't want this sport to be for pre-existing cricket fans. We want it to be for everyone.
Absolutely, yeah. That's right. But by the way, we do get invited to things occasionally, but it's never, you know, press conference and things. But we're never invited by the ECB. We're always invited by sponsors. And they always give us 24 hours notice or less. So it makes it almost impossible to go when you've got a job. But I don't know. I'm just having a whinge.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, you guys should be, if they have spare seats in the press box, they should be taken up by bloggers.
Absolutely.
And we have spare seats in the press box. Obviously, for an Ashes and for the odd India series, that's not the case. But even sometimes at the India series, because of the way Indian media works and our journalists do come out for the whole series quite a lot, there are still some tests where there are spare spots. So I think it is criminal for the ECB to ever have a press box that is not completely full.
Yeah.
And I know how hard it was to dig backward point to get themselves even county accreditation. Is it Deep Backward Point? I got the name of that blog right, didn't I?
Sorry, which one? The
county cricket blog, is that what we call Deep Backward Point?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous that they aren't letting every person that they want into it. And if they want to come up with a code of guidelines, they should do it for the journalists as well, but they should definitely send it out to them and they go, this is what you do. This is when you can't talk, for instance.
Yeah.
If you're laughing and making too much noise, you know, shut up, because some people are trying to work. You know, don't sing your sandwiches and things like that.
Yeah.
But realistically, you know, let's build the press boxes up. And these are the sorts of things that really, really frustrate me, especially in a country like the UK, which is trying to grow the game, which is what they should be doing. And then they go out of their way not to get involved with people who have proper cricket audiences.
They just don't like us very much. That's basically it. They don't like being held to account, probably. I don't know. No one likes being criticised.
It's not just being held to account, though. I mean, there are other blogs that they do the same with. It's not just you guys. This is an old-school media approach in a new-school media world. It doesn't work that way anymore.
Mm.
Why wouldn't you have some of the bigger cricket Twitterers invited to events? I still don't know why. I was contacted by the ECB years ago about ways that they could, help grow the game. One of the things I said was they've got a bunch, and this is before it became a really big issue, but I saw it happening about 2009, and there were a bunch of cricket blogs around, and the cricket blogs were starting to be really, really critical of England, the ECB and England as a team. And I said, if you want better press, the best way to do it is to get these people to meet the players. Now, in some occasions, they're going to meet the player and go, well, he's a moron, and they'll continue to abuse him. Some of the players, like, you know, Ian Bell's a really nice guy. And there are other cricketers who are really nice. Jonathan Trott is a very intense guy, but he can be really funny when he wants to be. So you would either come out of meeting him going, I cannot believe how funny Jonathan Trott is, or you would come out of it going, he's the scariest man I've ever met in my life. But either way, having known him, that will change that. And that's why cricket writers write differently about players than people in Paul Downton's outside cricket. So bring everyone inside cricket. Let them meet these people as well. You know, I mean, you should be in a situation where if you guys as the full toss want to talk to Trevor Bayliss, that should happen.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to do that, yeah, if we're ever bloody invited, yeah. But
not even bloody invited. You should be able to email them up and go, we're writing a piece about Trevor Bayliss, about this, and this. Can we get 5 minutes on the phone with
them? But the ECB are all about controlling the message, aren't they? Well, they seem to be, to me. You know, they don't want things to get out of their control.
Exactly, and that's my problem. I think one of cricket's biggest problems is what you just said then. It's about exclusion and it's about control.
It's nauseating, isn't it?
If you look at Test cricket and the way the cricket is run, they run the exact same ways. And we need to start thinking about this completely differently. We need to start, in the UK, cricket should not be a game that is thought of as middle class and Asian. It should be a game that is thought of as just another sport that anyone can enjoy. And it is not, and that is part of the historical problems of this game in this country. I mean, there are obviously racial problems in Australia. There are obviously ethnic problems in Australia. But when I look at when someone says to me, "Oh, your team's all white," and I look at it, I go, "You're right," but we also have Simon Katich, and we also have Mitchell Starc, and we also have DiVinuto and Kasperowicz, and we have Chiqui and Moses Enriquez. Where are those names in English cricket? They're not. What you have in English cricket is you have players coming from English backgrounds, you know, Anglo-Saxon backgrounds. You have Asian backgrounds, or you have empire backgrounds. You have South Africans and your West Indians.
and these sorts of things. Where are these other players coming from? Where, you know, Jason Krasier's father didn't know anything about cricket. He's a football goalkeeper from, I think, Poland or the Czech Republic.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember reading that.
Cricket. Yeah, he loved cricket because he felt like he was part of a team when he played for it. When I played cricket in Melbourne, we had less people who were what, you know, white racist Australian people would call proper Australians than we did Greek kids and Muslim kids from Lebanese backgrounds. And we had Italian kids. And, you know, I played cricket with Vietnamese kids and Cambodian kids. I don't see that as much over in the UK. That's a big problem with the UK, but it's also the way the game is run everywhere. It's this control and this exclusion, and we have to change that.
The more they try and control the message, the more disconnect there's going to be, isn't there? Because people can see through when, you know, I've now got to the point where, you know, when Sky have interview the players at the end of the day, I just whiz through about that bit or turn it off, because I'm not interested in what the players are going to say, because you know what they're going to say anyway. You know, they're reading from a predetermined script and it's boring. You never get an insight into what the players are really, really like. And that's incredibly frustrating. But then again, you know, it's, I suppose the ECB don't get everything right, do they?
No.
Maybe they'll change.
If I was running the ECB, before each test, I would say, here's your 11 players, you've got 20 minutes, run over to whichever player you want, ask them whatever question you want. And at the end of the test, I would do what they do in the NBA and the NFL and all those other sports, where I'd let the journalists go and hang out with them for a little while and do the same thing again. You can't do it during the test because, you know, there is a specific reason why that doesn't work during the test. But you can do it before and after the test. And one of the worst things in cricket is the proper press conference, because cricketers don't feel comfortable with it. The journalists don't really feel that comfortable with it. We don't get anything good out of it. It doesn't promote the game. And it's just kind of pointless. I remember when England had their most amazing day in boxing, at the boxing day 10-11, and Tim Breslin came out, and he couldn't say what he wanted to say, which is, we've won this test, we've won this series, Australia are dead and buried. He had to say, well, the game's still alive. And then when the journalists tried to press him more on it, he got more defensive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking at my time, this cannot be the best way to do this.
Cliche followed by cliche. It's
On a bad day, you probably do that. On a good day, maybe you put out three players and you just let them mingle with the press for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
There has to be other ways of doing things. And it's part of cricket's overall problem, is that we don't really do that. I mean, it's a pioneering sport in many different ways, but it's still a backward sport.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got to keep the pressure on, basically. That's what we need to do. Go on.
No, exactly. We have to keep the pressure on. We have to keep our passion up. Cricket supporters are a very passive group. We support cricket from afar. English cricket, New Zealand cricket are perfect examples of we watch cricket in those countries in almost a cultural way. It's almost a cultural sport. But we don't put any pressure on the people who run it. We just kind of enjoy it. We enjoy people enjoy the scones or whatever. You look at the passion that the subcontinent has.
Yeah.
That's the kind of passion that we really need from cricket fans all over the world. And that passion then needs to be put on the people who are running the game, so that we can get the game that we finally want. Because in the way that I look at cricket is, we've basically got a brilliant game despite the people who run it. And we have to then get to a point eventually, at one stage in the history of cricket, where the opposite is true, where we have a game because of the people who run it, and they have actually also helped us, and it has grown the game around the world, and it becomes a game that you and I love, and we know how brilliant this game is. We know how amazing it is. Well, you know, in the film we have, you know, Mahi saying a brilliant thing where he says, we want maybe 10% of the population of China to play the sport, because that's what sport is about, getting as many people to play it as possible. And, you know, it's not just about China. I want, you know, people in Brazil to play it, in Russia to play it, in Nepal. We want all of Papua New Guinea to take up the sport. You know, we want Indonesia to play the sport. We know that this is an amazing sport. That's why we're literally talking to each other. Why would we want it to be our exclusive sport anymore? Why don't we want, for the first time in history, for everyone to play the sport and everyone to get a chance? I mean, the perfect analogy of the way that cricket is run right at the moment is the greatest story to happen to world sport, I'll say world cricket, perhaps world sport in the last 10 years, is Afghanistan playing cricket.
Yeah, it's a great story.
You know, coming from absolutely nowhere, picking it up in refugee camps, and then getting so good so fast. They play it in a beautiful way. And cricket is saying, we don't want you in the next World Cup. We're going to make it almost impossible for you to make it to the next World Cup. And at the same time, the person who is running the ICC is a person who's been kicked out of his sport by the Supreme Court of India, who's had his team kicked out of the IPL. And
we
say he's allowed to run our sport, and we're okay with that, and virtually no one says anything about it.
The conflict of interest is just so stark. It's you just got to shake your head. It's awful, isn't it? And for all the corruption at FIFA as well, at least they can say that football is growing as a global sport, whereas cricket's contracting. It's nuts.
Can you imagine football, basketball, rugby, looking at Afghanistan and going, how do we make a tournament slightly smaller so we can't get it? I mean, that's not how other sport is run. I mean, I put this out to people. And if someone can find it, I'd love to see it. But I don't know of a single sport that's trying to contract other than cricket.
I can't think of one. No. No. There isn't one. Surely. Yeah.
And so that is a crime against our sport.
Yeah.
And you can say it's a moral crime, or you could say it's an actual crime. It doesn't matter. It is a crime against our sport. They are ruining our game for their own personal use. And, you know, I've just done a book on the history of Test cricket. I know that this is not a sport that's ever been brilliantly run. But we are now smarter. And we have more people to call them. We have more media. We have more availability to us. You can go and write a blog that goes viral tomorrow. We have the option to call these people on this. We have to start putting pressure on them. We have to be involved. We cannot just be passive cricket fans anymore, because if we do that, we don't know what cricket is going to be like in 10 years. And maybe it's Test cricket that takes the bullet. Maybe it's one day cricket that takes the bullet. Maybe Test cricket, one day cricket continue to go, but the top nations don't. Only the top nations play it amongst themselves. And countries like Sri Lanka and Pakistan and the West Indies and New Zealand and Ireland just fade away. That will be on our watch.
Yeah.
And we now have a watch. For the first time ever, we have the ability, we have a voice. We have to be involved with this. And that's why we made the film, because we were so frustrated that people were sitting around and going, oh, Test cricket's dying. And no one was looking into why, no one was looking into how, and no one was doing anything to try and fix these things. And that's why we made the film. And I'm sure, you know, when you look down at why you guys made the blog, it's a similar thing. You're not happy with the way cricket is being talked about, with the way that cricket is being run, and you want to do something about it. And everyone who listens, you know, everyone who reads your blog is in the same situation. Whether they have the time or the ability to write, they really love this game, and it's time that we stand up as cricket fans.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good way probably to finish, isn't it? A rallying cry, a call to arms. And there's certain things that people can do, other than watching Death of a Gentleman, which I recommend that everybody does, obviously. There's also the hashtag on Twitter, isn't there, Cricket Change?
Cricket,
yeah, and you've got the website, cricketchange.com, and there's a petition as well, isn't there?
Change Cricket, not Cricket Change.
Sorry, Change Cricket, yeah. Sorry, I've written that down wrong. Sorry.
yeah, we've got all those things, and we'll be explaining those later. We've obviously... At the moment, one of the most important things is to get people to see the film, because obviously the film is really now... We didn't want to just make a film that people liked and then nothing happened. We have to make a film that really captures the spirit of the game and shows why everything is going wrong within the game. Yeah. And when I talk about the spirit of the game, I don't mean the spirit of cricket. I mean just cricket itself. But what we wanted with Change Cricket is now we want to implement things that can actually change the way that cricket is run. And so Sam is very heavily involved with this. I'm involved with it as much as I can be. But we're basically trying to come up with a blueprint for what, like when you said before, what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, we want to get politicians involved. We're trying to win over key people in the media. We're trying to, get a petition. We're trying to get the hashtag going. We're trying to get all the newspapers in the world to write about Change Cricket as it comes out. And so that we can actually change the game, so we can actually improve the game. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do. If we just made the film and walked away, we would still, I think we'd still be proud of the film. Maybe it would have felt a little bit hollow, if you know what I mean, especially having spent 4 years on it to make the film and go, okay, now it's over to you guys.
Yeah.
Sort of saying, now it's over to you guys, but we're still here and we're in the trenches and we're trying to come up with a plan that can help it. We do want to hold these boards to accountability. They can't make billion-dollar decisions and not do that. So go to changecricket.com. We'll be explaining more and more about changecricket.com as we can. And if you see an article that you know, that whether it's on a blog or whether it's on a newspaper, you know, wherever it is, and you think this is something that should be shared, share it, and share it with the hashtag Change Cricket. So
yeah,
people know that, you know, that what you stand for, and hopefully over time we can make that into something really important. We're now seeing that some of these fan groups and these advocacy groups really can make a difference, and that's what we should be doing in cricket, because we are the second biggest sport on earth. I will defend that with anyone who wants to argue with me. I think it is the second biggest sport on earth.
Yeah.
And we should be doing more with it, and we should be protecting it and safeguarding it and just fighting for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll obviously do whatever we can. We're going to be writing a positive review of Death of a Gentleman, and we'll be tweeting with the hashtag and getting people to share as much as we can. And yeah, I mean, good luck. I mean, I just say that everyone should go and watch Death of a Gentleman, because it's got the potential to be the most important film made on cricket. You know, I mean, there aren't too many films made on cricket, but this one is powerful, and people should go and see it, because the message is, you can't argue with it. You know, there's so much wrong with cricket, and I feel a bit more empowered after talking to you today. When I actually saw the film, I was a little bit depressed, thinking, oh no, what can we do? It's all doomed. But I think you're right. You know, we've got to be optimistic. We've got to try. We've got to use what power we have. So, you know, thanks for talking to us, Jared. Basically, you've kind of raised my spirits.
No problem. I'll leave you with this. There's a billion of us and there's three of them. Eventually, I think we can win.
Yeah, that's good. Vive la revolution, basically.
Exactly. And thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, brilliant. No, thanks a lot, Jared. You've given us more than enough time. It's been brilliant to talk to you. And I wish the film all the best success in the world.
Beautiful. Thanks,
brilliant. Mate. Cheers, Jared. Bye.